This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Annie Bruno, a consulting specialist with the Autism Program at the University of Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of August 7th, 2023. In guidance issued last week, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services now say that states can continue using flexibilities that were instituted because of the COVID-19 pandemic while they revise their Medicaid waiver programs to add those changes. Daniel Tsai is the Deputy Administrator and Director of the Center for Medicaid and CHIP Services at CMS. According to Tsai, community-based service programs, such as the use of telehealth or remote service provision, increased payment rates, expansion of self-direction service delivery models, addition or expansion of services, and expansion of provider networks to include family members and legally responsible individuals are among the changes that are going to be continued from COVID. States had been informed that the COVID flexibilities would expire on November 11th, but now states are able to extend that deadline. Extending changes had been requested by disability service providers who have struggled to attract and retain direct support professionals, with continuing concern that vacancy and turnover would increase without regulatory flexibilities and relief funding. David Goldfarb, Policy Director at the ARC, says the extension will help provide continuity for many people with developmental disabilities and that, quote, this will certainly mitigate the risk that people with disabilities will experience interruption in services related to these flexibilities. The impact will depend on the state, end quote. In September of 2022, more than 35% of Americans with disabilities were employed, which is the largest percentage for the 15 years the federal government has kept track. In Minnesota, there has been a response to the lack of workers for increasing numbers of open positions by the State Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. They have launched a campaign to encourage employers to hire from non-traditional talent pools, including people with disabilities. In 2019, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz signed an executive order to increase employment of people with disabilities in state agencies, with positive results. Data show that the percentage of state employees with disabilities increased from 7.1% to 11.7% since 2019. A nonprofit think tank, COQUAL, specializing in workplace diversity, said that 30% of employers 30% of employees have a disability or are neurodivergent, and that 62% of employees with disabilities have what is described as non-visible disability, making it challenging for employers who are trying to offer inclusive benefits. Dasha Van Alstyne, Business Services and Employment Program Specialist for Deed State Services for the Blind, says providing accommodations for employees is not as difficult as employers might think. According to Alstyne, quote, it can be as simple as moving their computer away from the window. Most accommodations cost less than $500, end quote. The Minnesota Reasonable Accommodation Program has $4 million in funding over the next 2 years for reimbursing smaller companies for expenses connected to providing reasonable accommodations for employees with disabilities. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce also offers resources, including webinars for companies trying to build a more diverse workforce, saying that it's important for business leaders to consider disability as part of their diversity, equity, and inclusion strategies. In addition, companies may need to change policies, procedures, job descriptions, and guidelines for providing accommodations to be sure they are using best practices. This year, the Illinois State Fair will be more accessible for people with sensory processing disorders. According to Rebecca Clark, the manager of the Illinois State Fair, quote, statistics show 1 in 7 individuals live with a disability. Those with autism, PTSD, and other sensory processing sensitivities often experience sensory overload, limiting their ability to comfortably participate in social gatherings. Clark said experiences like the state fair can be tricky for those with sensory processing sensitivities. But the fair is launching 2 new initiatives to help people with these sensitivities feel more comfortable at the fair. The first is called Sunflower Hours. That goes from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, August 12th, when trained employees will be handing out sunflower stickers for those with sensory processing disorders and turning down music to be less overstimulating. Amusement rides will operate without flashing lights or sounds to make a more accommodating environment. The second accommodation is a sensory station open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day of the fair. It will be located in the Emerson Building and will offer a safe space for those who are overwhelmed or overstimulated, and the space will be equipped with noise-canceling headphones, calming pods, and quiet activities to aid children and adults who need help processing the sights, sounds, smells, noises, and crowds associated with the fair, said Clark. The event begins on Thursday at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield and runs through August 20th. And finally, in another story about Minnesota, the U.S. Department of Education says that the state allows teachers holding temporary licenses to work in special education classrooms for too long. In response to a long-standing teacher shortage, Minnesota has been allowing college graduates with a bachelor's degree to work in any classroom for up to 3 years. But federal law prohibits those educators from working in special education for a 4th year, despite the fact that districts can apply for renewal in other disciplines. Minnesota state officials also say they will be notifying what are known as Tier 1 educators that they must either seek higher credentials or risk becoming ineligible to keep their positions in the coming school year in 2024. The state's teachers union says the U.S. Department of Education letter showing the shortcomings of Minnesota's educator license shows the shortcomings of the educator licensing system. According to President Denise Specht of Education Minnesota, quote, the Minnesota Department of Education's plan will meet some of our union's concerns, but not all. And we're still waiting for a concrete plan to provide the necessary high-quality training to Tier 1 special education teachers, end quote. During the 2021-22 school year, almost 1/3 of Tier 1 educators were assigned to special education, according to state figures. And that's the news for this week.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat, and joining me today is Annie Bruno, who is a consulting specialist with the Autism Program at the University of Illinois, also commonly known as TAP. Welcome to the program, Annie.
Thank you for having me here.
Why don't we start out by having you introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up at TAP.
Well, it's kind of a funny story because it's very cyclical. I got my social work degree here from the University of Illinois, both as a bachelor's degree, and then I went on to do my master's. And my bachelor's level internship was at TAP. And it was a block placement, so I was there for 32 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very rewarding and interesting internship that kind of led me on my direction to definitely want to work with folks with disabilities. So I went on to work in a couple other social service agencies in the field, and then have just recently joined in January back on my old stomping grounds.
Yeah, so you are a townie.
I am a townie through and through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good to have you have people stay, because so often people who go to the University of Illinois end up going off to the big city after they're done getting their degree. So it's great to have you here. And you have worked, full disclosure, you have worked with my daughter in a number of ways over the years. Yeah. So as young as you are, you are an experienced person in disability world in the Champaign-Urbana area. So thank you for being here today. It's always great having somebody here in person to be able to talk to face-to-face. So through COVID, I had so many people doing phone interviews, and it's fine, but not as good
as this.
I
think we're all zoomed out at this point.
Yeah, we are definitely all zoomed out. So tell us all about TAP. What is TAP, and what does it do?
TAP stands for the Autism Program. We are a statewide network of about 15 sites across the state of Illinois, and we receive funding from the Department of Human Services. And when they originally developed TAP here locally in Champaign, they connected with the university, and they identified it as a partner. So we are a community-based program funded by the state, housed at the university. A little confusing.
Yeah. So not all the other 15 sites are not necessarily connected to university settings then?
Correct. There's a few that are connected to provider agencies.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Hope Clinic in Springfield is where our headquarters is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety, and we happen to be one that's associated with the university because the need that was identified by my predecessors back in, I think, 2005,
mm-hmm.
was a need for a kind of community-based education referral center with the opportunity and the mindset to train future professionals.
Oh.
So a lot of our work in conjunction with the university is the hope that we are training students.
Mm-hmm.
We have internships each semester. And so that's a lot of where our focus has gone. We are not a direct provider clinic. Some TAP sites are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do any diagnostics, but we do a lot of education and referring and training.
Okay, so more than likely, I'm thinking your first contact with a family is we have a child that we either suspect has autism or has been recently diagnosed with autism. So am I correct in that assumption?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So walk me through what happens for that family when they come to you.
Sure. Well, we offer most, if not all, of our services are free. And we offer free consultations to anyone. And so you could be 5 years into an autism diagnosis and still want to consult on a challenging part of it. And mm-hmm. so we will do a free consultation with parents, professionals, school teachers, whoever. But we do specifically offer a new diagnosis orientation is our kind of fancy terminology for it. And it's something TAP-wide offers.
Mm-hmm.
And I do those. So we usually get a referral from someone who's just been to, you know, the developmental pediatrician or just recently gotten their diagnosis, and they set up an orientation with us. We allow for about an hour and a half. We kind of walk through the basics of autism. What does the diagnosis look like? What does it mean? What are components that are often present in the diagnosis? And then we just throw everything at you that we could think of that could be helpful. So mm-hmm. we will do support groups in the community. We'll give you brochures and flyers. We have a lending library where we have you check out certain books we think would be good for you to read. And we, my colleague, Adrian, who's super stellar, she will brainstorm with you some good visual supports to get you going. Folks with autism tend to be very visually oriented and benefit from visual supports. So we will make some of those custom made, personalized for you or your child or whoever it is that you're working with.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any parent support groups at all?
We don't necessarily facilitate those, but we've worked in conjunction with others that are going on. We have had them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we will facilitate a social skills group for young adults or preteens, and we'll have parents come simultaneously and meet separately. We don't have any of those running right now, but mm-hmm. We have done that in the past. And I also currently moderate a Adults on the Spectrum support group.
Ah, so a group of self-advocates. Mm-hmm. That, yeah. Okay. And so what would you say, is there kind of at first I was thinking it was just young parents of younger children with diagnoses of autism, but it sounds like you're serving the entire spectrum.
Yeah, it's a little complicated just in the way that funding works. We are funded to support individuals 0 to 22,
mm-hmm.
but we like to work with any need that we see in the community. So Adults on the Spectrum came to us and said, hey, we want to get our support group up and running again. Would you be willing to help us get that going? And would you be willing to help moderate? So that's something we jumped on as an opportunity. We also work with all professionals and teachers and staff. So even if you're not coming for a loved one of a young child, TAP will still happily have a consult or offer you resources.
Yeah. So if there's a teacher out there listening who knows that they're going to have a child with autism in their class this coming fall and they're concerned about that, again, contact TAP. And what are some of the things that might happen for that individual teacher?
Yeah, come visit us anytime. We are a community agency with a resource room that's open during typical business hours.
Mm-hmm.
This week we're on limited schedule, but you can always check out our Facebook page for our most up-to-date schedule. A teacher coming in would probably talk at length with my colleague Adrian, or we have student interns that are working in the resource room that are going to point you in the right direction. So we can give you any amount of grab-and-go visual supports that you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
There's shelves full of them. And then we also make personalized, customized ones. So often a teacher or a parent will come in and say, my kid is so excited about Avengers. Can you make his bathroom schedule or his morning routine have some Avenger characters on it? Mm-hmm. And so we will make that more appealing to use in that way.
Do you go to meetings with both teachers and parents and help coordinate some of that collaboration between, or is that it's pretty much a separate kind of a thing?
We don't typically do that, but we often will tell both parties, tell the other party that they're welcome to come visit us. So if parents are having trouble in the classroom with feeling like their child's getting supports they need, we say, why don't you encourage the teacher to come visit us and we can give them some supports. And vice versa, if the teacher is coming in with some concerns, we'll say, have the family come visit us, set up a consultation.
So you're doing what I suggested. It's
right.
Just a little different format than sitting down at the same table. So that's right. Interesting. Do any of your people go and observe a kid in a classroom?
We don't typically offer that. Just we are a small but mighty staff of three. So we don't typically offer that for a service, but my dear predecessor, Linda Tortorelli, has done some excellent work with more challenging cases in advocacy and crisis-based situations and challenging IEPs. I myself, since starting in January, haven't had a lot of those pop up, but I'm certainly open to trying to help facilitate a positive conversation with folks.
Well, it's good to know that there's a resource for families for advocacy, because there's always a need with mm-hmm. that. And I think now that we're through COVID, we're going to end up with more of a need than ever, because kids are getting back into the classroom on a full-time basis and things crop up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids with autism don't necessarily fit the mold of a typical student. And so oftentimes teachers who do, you know, who went through school and they were perfectly fine as students, have that same expectation of the kids in their classroom. So what are some things that you might say to a teacher, tell a teacher about a kid who has autism, just kind of in general, to help them better understand what that student's needs might be?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of what we try to promote is just the acceptance of, you know, there was a mindset, I think, years past that autistic folks needed to blend in with the neurotypical society and mm-hmm. expectations. And I think there's more emerging a thought that autistic individuals can be autistic, and that's okay, and mm-hmm. that's celebrated. And so I think potential teachers who don't have a lot of education may wonder about fidgeting, or what people will call stimming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the education I would provide them, is that motor movement is designed to help the individual regulate. And so folks with autism are not, you know, flapping their hands because they think it's fun. They're flapping their hands because it provides them a sense of calm and comfort in their own body. So I would say to a teacher, be open and encouraging of that. Provide sensory breaks. Just talk about this idea of, like, you have an emergency sensory bag that's good for each child in their backpack. I went to a great training with Karen Sims Crawford, where she talked about a little to-go sensory bag in your purse or in your desk or in your backpack that's got something that is positive to you tactile-wise, smells good, tastes good, and it just having that grounding to get your body back down to regulation is a great tool to use.
Yeah, it's really amazing how many strategies there are that can be successful for a student with autism that some teachers intuitively know that, you know, it's okay for this kid, and maybe even okay for other kids in the class because, as you know, oftentimes is said, everyone's on the spectrum to some degree. And mm-hmm. so it's just that some people have more needs than others. And if you have somebody who's open to differences with kids, they're not only good with kids with autism, they're good with kids that have a whole variety of needs. And hopefully you're encouraging, you know, that kind of mindset when you're working with the educators out there.
Definitely. And we also say, come visit our resource room. Any kid, any human, any person benefits from having a visual paired with, like, an auditory command. Or if you're told, go put your shoes on, brush your teeth, and get your backpack, sometimes it can be hard to remember what was the last thing you said, because I was focused on getting my shoes on. I didn't hear the other two things. And so having a visual paired with a command is just the easiest way, I think, to start building those tools.
So for people who are not understanding the whole visual component mm-hmm. of this, and we are just talking, so it's a little bit difficult to demonstrate, what would that visual look like?
So we have many different types, and we have all the tools. We've got a binder, we've got a laminator, we're all sorts of fancy. So what we will typically do is create, like, for instance, let's say, wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that to someone and you could think, oh, that's a pretty simple ask, but there is a lot of components of washing your hands. You have to turn on the sink, you have to get your hands wet, you have to go get soap, you have to rinse them off. So when you break down a task like that, what we do is we will take either cartoon board maker pictures, or we'll take real life photos of someone, and we'll print them out and put them on a sheet of paper that then gets laminated and can get hung up in the bathroom next to the sink. So when I say go wash your hands, you can, it provides autonomy for the child to go follow their visual support that walks them through all the steps. They don't have to remember, after I rinse, then what do I do? Because that can be a pretty complex skill, just to learn how to wash your hands. And imagine if you have wash your hands in a bathroom routine. Well, there's a lot of components that go to using the bathroom. It's not easy to work through. So having some visuals of what's expected, that could be laminated sheets of paper. We'll often use like Velcro to have you move one picture over to another part of the visual. So like a first, then. First, we're going to have math time, and then we're going to have a snack. And so you're giving the child the option to pick up what, you know, do they want this snack or that snack? And so there's, we will do like laminated books and bound books. So we have all sorts of tools.
Are social stories a thing anymore?
Yeah, social stories.
Explain to the listeners what a social story is.
I will take the words from my colleague, Adrian. A social story is like an instruction manual about a certain task or event or life circumstance. So we have social stories that say, you know, no biting. And this is why I don't bite. And I'm a good friend because I don't bite. And it kind of walks you through why we shouldn't bite other people. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a funny example. But we just had one of our interns for their final project write a social story about pronoun usage and how we can understand and support our friends when they use certain pronouns or when they request usage of certain pronouns. And I can be a good friend by supporting them and trying to use that pronoun. And so it really walks the person through, in the form of a book, a confusing social nuance or a life event, like we're going to move to a new town. And here's what I can expect when
that
we move.
That can be traumatic for a lot of people with disabilities, not just folks with autism.
It's a big life event. Yeah.
Or for, you know, me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a huge deal.
Yeah. It was a huge deal. And so I know that over the year, when I first started teaching way, way back in the day, people with autism were thought to have an intellectual disability. But that's not always true, is it?
No, it's not always true. You're right.
Even people who are nonverbal.
Sure.
Still yes. Can have typical or even high intelligence.
We like to say that everything on the autism spectrum is a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So intelligence, hyposensitivity or hypersensitivity, everything kind of varies. And I like to picture it instead of what we're often seeing as like a straight line of a spectrum. The autism spectrum is more like a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
You can have very high intelligence, but be incredibly sensitive to sensory issues that prohibit you from being in a normal classroom. Or you may be intellectually impaired, but very agile and coordinated.
Yeah.
Everything on the spectrum is a spectrum.
So if people want information from you, from TAP, how do they get a hold of you? Do you have a website, phone number?
We do. I believe the TAP website is tap.illinois.edu.
Mm-hmm.
You can also visit our Facebook page, which I think is the Autism Program Urbana-Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
Our Facebook page is probably most up to date. We just recently got an Instagram page, which I think is tap.uiuc.
Mm-hmm.
Our resource room, I can't remember the number offhand, but it's if you call that phone number, we have interns that staff it during typical business hours, so you'll catch one of us.
Yeah, just Google the autism program at University of Illinois and should be able to get it. No problem.
You should be able to find us all sorts of ways.
Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Annie. I really appreciate it. Annie Bruno, consulting specialist for the autism program at the University of Illinois. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down.